Welcome everybody to Kamloops Alliance. My name is Chris. I'm really glad that you're here. Wherever you're tuning in from, we're kind of calling it the KAC extended family now. So if you're in our province, in our nation, or around the world, welcome to Kamloops in a very strange way. I'm glad that you're here. Just really want to vision two things quickly. First thing, next weekend we are finishing our series, The Way of Jesus, with something called the practice of a rule of life. And you're like, wow, Chris, that sounds fun. I love rules. Tell me more. No, this actually is basically a trellis for the vine of your life to grow on. It's a practice that kind of brings everything together and gives you a plan about your spiritual formation. So that's next week. And then the Tuesday following, I'm going to host a Zoom kind of webinar on how you actually do your own rule of life. So that's coming up. Make sure to sign up. I'd love to see you online. Secondly is after that weekend, we're going to start a new series called Famous Last Words, and we are camping out at the cross leading up to Easter for 7 weeks, looking at the seven statements of Jesus in his last moments on the cross, really revealing who Jesus is. So be excited. I think it's going to be amazing. We believe that a disciple of Jesus loves, gathers, practices, and goes. This week, we're looking actually at two of the three, the gathering and the practice of gathering in community. This weekend is the practice of Christian community. See, we believe the practices are so important to your spiritual formation. Without doing the practices, it's kind of like skipping leg day at the gym. So if you're not a gym goer, you know, everybody wants to go to the gym. They want big biceps. They want toned abs. And oftentimes, they skip leg day. And what ends up happening is that, sure, you build muscles up top, but on the bottom, you're just a skinny rake. And so you end up kind of looking like a chicken. You're big up top, and you got skinny little legs. And we just think, no, that's not spiritual formation. The practice is us engaging in leg day. It's having a strong foundation for our lives. And so that's why this series, I think, is so important for us. So this week is the practice of being in community. And here we go again, folks. I am wading into the minefield again. We're in COVID-19. There's lots of baggage with church stuff. And so I just humbly ask for a lot of grace as we get into this. Hebrews chapter 10. That's where we're going to be. Hebrews chapter 10 for our time. I of course, love to unpack more of this. I don't have time, but we don't have time. Hebrews chapter 10. If you have your Bibles, even an app, if you're on your computer right now, flip up a Bible. Hebrews chapter 10. We're just going to look at three verses, verse 23 to 25. And really what we're going to see is just three instructions for community, for us together. Here's the first one. Verse 23, Hebrews 10 goes like this. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. Let us hold unswervingly. So we're actually gonna land at the hope that we profess, the holding unswervingly. We're gonna land there. But I just want to point out how this verse starts. Let us hold. Us. In these six verses, verses 19 to 25, six verses, us and we are said 14 times, 14 times. Actually, this is one of the driving kind of themes of the book of Hebrews, is just community. You have the hall of faith in Hebrews 11. It's just us following Jesus and who Jesus is and what this all means. And so really at the heart of this chapter, of this book, and I would even say of the Bible, is this idea of community, that we need community. We need each other. 14 times in these six verses, this is what it means. But also, oftentimes in the New Testament, we get this word, you. And when we read it as Westerners, we understand that as like me as an individual. But the setting of the New Testament was communal. It was a group of people. So the you in the New Testament is actually plural. And in the New Testament, there are more than 50 one another's. In other words, in community, we carry one another's burdens. We love one another. There's 50 of them. So the entire context of the New Testament is life together in community. Let us hold unswervingly. So because of that, the church is actually not a building. And we as evangelicals, our tradition, we love that terminology. The church is not a building. We're not a building. And this is true. The word for church in the New Testament is a Greek word, ecclesia. And the original kind of connotation of it would be in a Roman town, that the town crier would call an ecclesia, would call a gathering or an assembly of the people to give them an update from the government as far as maybe a war that they had won or a new tax or something like that. It was a gathering or an assembly of the people. And so that is the actual word used in the New Testament for church, for us together. What is this? It's an assembly of people. So that's beautiful because the church, that means, is actually deployed in this season. Even though we can't be together, the church is actually deployed. So the church is not really a building. And sometimes, especially in our tradition, we can actually get that confused that, oh, it's about buildings and campaigns and big kind of beautiful structures, that maybe that's an indicator of the health of a church. And it's actually not. Now, are buildings and campaigns important and good and right in their own time? Absolutely. But we can get confused sometimes about this. Because the church is a gathering of people. And so they have met in the New Testament. They met in homes. Now here, we meet here at 200 Lee Road in Kamloops. If you're in Africa, you don't have a building, you can meet under a tree. Like, this is kind of the resiliency of the church. And so that's why our language here through this pandemic has been like, we've just been deployed because we're an assembly of people. We're the scattered people of God in our neighborhoods and in our families and in our homes. And I believe that God has honored our posture in that language and that position, that, man, we have been KAC scattered right now, bringing redemptive, loving lift to our homes and our neighborhoods and our workplaces. And I think this is important. And I gave an update last week about all the cool things that God is doing in our church. And I know that we're going to look back at this time and see God's work in and through our church in amazing ways. So the church absolutely is not a building, but listen, at the same time, the church is a gathering or an assembly of people. We have always been together. So we scatter and we gather. We scatter and we gather. That is what the church is. They have always gathered together. So listen, I want to say this clearly. Solo discipleship, solo apprenticeship to Jesus is not a biblical idea, it is a cultural one. It is not a biblical idea, it's a cultural one that fits so well right now in our culture of individualism. This radical freedom, this hesitancy to commit to anything, this desire to keep our options open, the desire to kind of just see this, that me and Jesus are just doing this together, that is not a biblical idea. It is a cultural one. The idea of unlimited freedom. Oh, that is so beautiful for us. But it's actually contrary to the teaching of Scripture that we have to be a gathered people together. And so I've heard it like this. You know, what really is church for me is I just go skiing. Oh, that's church for me. Or I go on a hike. That's church for me. Listen, while that may be life-giving for you, while that may be important to your mental health, that is not the church. It is not going to church for you to go skiing or to go hiking on a Saturday night or a Sunday morning when we gather together. It's just not. Why? Because it's not the gathered people of God. You know that you've been to church when there are people in the room that you would not choose to be there. I've heard it said like that. You would know that you have been to church when there are people in the room that you would not choose to be there. Why? Because it's every tribe and language and ethnicity and socioeconomic bracket that come together with all of our differences, but united under the umbrella and name of Jesus. That's when you know that you have been to church. So even right now, I get the tension that we can't be together. To me, it is so interesting that in our culture, this word diversity is so beautiful, actually, and so desired, except when it comes to our freedom. Because when you go to church and the only people you have there are the people that you choose, there's no diversity at all. You all have the same last name. So we like it until it infringes upon our freedom. It's an interesting cultural insight, I believe. So that's the first instruction for community is let us together do this. And then In verse 24, it says, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds." And let us, again, consider how we spur one another on. How do we, as the gathered people of God, be a catalyst to love, loving each other, loving God, even maybe loving ourselves, and good deeds? How do we bring lift? And when that's happening well, the church is beautiful. It is compelling. I believe that when the church is operating as it should, spurring one another on to love and good deeds under the name, banner, and ministry of Jesus, the local church is the hope of the world. I believe it, and I've given my life up until this point for that belief. But when the church isn't going well, we're actually not spurring each other on. Maybe we've actually felt deterred from love and good deeds. Maybe we've felt rejected. We haven't felt spurred on at all. Maybe we felt hurt or forgotten. You know, right now, the story that I hear too often is the deconversion story. So I once believe and now I don't. What also grieves me is the de-church story. I used to attend, but I no longer do. For whatever reason, maybe you still love Jesus, but you no longer find yourself in community. And there's many reasons for that. There's good friends of mine, family members, people in my life who I love dearly, conversations that I've had recently who just feel, it actually isn't a place of like warmth and invitation. It's actually a place of disillusionment and skepticism because of community and your experience of it. And I can see why. I can't feel what you feel, but I can understand why your hesitancy, skepticism, disillusionment of Christian community or what we would call the church. I mean, historically, the church comes with baggage. If you live in Kamloops, you may drive by every day what was the Kamloops Residential School. It opened in 1893 and closed in 1977. And using the name of my Savior, the church caused cultural genocide and generational hurt that still lasts until today. This week, I watched a 23-minute interview with somebody who went through the Kamloops Residential School here. Her name is Cecile Ketlow. And I don't know how you can be a functioning human being and watch her 23-minute interview where she breaks down numerous times about her experience in residential schools and not lament and not grieve the baggage of the historical injustices of the church. So historically, this comes with community. The church comes with lots of stuff. But even personally for you, as you've experienced the church of Christian community life together, you haven't felt spurred on to love and good deeds. You felt rejected, maybe. Maybe your life didn't follow the pattern that you wanted it to or that the people wanted it to. And so you were actually rejected in your greatest time of need. Maybe you were in a season of struggling and were forgotten. Maybe you had doubts, and instead of people listening with empathy and invitation, you were actually scolded and Bible beaten when you had doubts or even questions about the faith. Maybe for you, you've had some doctrinal nuances stuffed down your throat and it's hurt you and it's caused you to be marginalized and you've been confused about things. Maybe for you, you were hurt by the Bible or teaching or leaders. I mean, I remember I was a part of a program in the United States in 2011. And I was deeply immersed in this church because they were teaching me, and it was a great place. I deeply respected the senior leader at this church, his effectiveness, his passion for the gospel, for scripture, for church history, the impact that this church was having. And so I just loved being a part of this. I made friends in this community, and it really deeply impacted the way that I viewed the church and the possibilities of the beauty and impact of the church. And just a few years after I was there, every month for a few days, this church imploded because of the abusive leadership style of the senior leader. And friends of mine were deeply hurt, de-churched, de-converted. And I was hurt too, disillusioned by, oh, I thought everything was going well. And all of a sudden, everything is in shambles. So that may be your story, that you were a part of a community that just broke down, and leadership and ick and all the muddle and muck and mess of all of this sort of stuff. Like I said, when the church gets it right, we spur each other on to love and good deeds, and there's lift and there's joy. But when we get it wrong, there's a pile of rubble emotionally. And that may be you today. And I don't know what you need. And I don't want to make it worse. But let me just speak to this just a little bit. Again, very gently and very humbly. What I've seen in the church as a church leader myself is the root of all hurt and bitterness is unmet expectations. You had an expectation that you should be loved, cared for, sought after, and it wasn't met. You had and some of these expectations are good and right and should be there, and it just wasn't met. And this is kind of left you where you're at today. I don't know your situation. I don't know the people involved. I don't know how long ago it was, but let me just talk to you as an imperfect church leader myself. That's all I can address with you. Me, myself, as an imperfect church leader, I think back on my 15 or so years in church leadership, and there was times where I unknowingly hurt people. I just missed it. I didn't see it. Or I forgot about somebody that I should have followed up on and they weren't followed up with. And it just kind of left that person a mess. There were times, even in preaching moments, where I was too aggressive and I wasn't empathetic enough. There were times in pastoral counseling where I should have said something that I didn't. And I know that I unknowingly and for sure unwillingly have hurt people. And yet my job as a church leader is to emulate the ministry of Jesus, to be his hands and feet and his messenger. And I want to be as close to him as possible. But here's the reality when I look at my life, that I come in kind of here and Jesus is here. That I try my best and have tried my best and will continue to try my best to be a godly, Jesus, spirit-filled leader. But there's always a gap. And this gap that between who I want to be and who I am as a leader and as a pastor, as a preacher, this gap is filled with what we call grace. Scandalous, life-changing grace that meets me and brings me close to Jesus. And this is the grace that I have to lean on as a church leader who is imperfect. And my commitment is, and throughout all of this, is that I've always wanted to own whatever part I played, either unknowingly or unwillingly, that I just want to own it because there's so much at stake, your trust of a community and of the church and of his people. And so that's just my offering to you as somebody who hasn't always got it right, but deeply desires to. Maybe this story will help. You know, I'm so excited about season 3 of our podcast that launches in February. It's 8 huge questions leading up to Easter that you may have of the faith. And one of them is this kind of the church, the hypocrisy of the church. And so actually tomorrow, I'm podcasting, interviewing. Her name is Mary Jo Sharp, and she's a Christian apologist. And she wrote a book called Why I Still Believe. And in it, it's a very authentic exploration of her experience with church. In her book, Why I Still Believe, Mary Jo Sharp says this: I knew I should practice what I preached and give all this muddle, all of the stuff, all of the hurt over to God. But even knowing that God could handle my heartbrokenness and distrust still couldn't move me past 24 years of exploitation, shallowness, vilification at the hands of church pastors, leaders, and members. 24 years of just unmet expectation, hurt, vilification, exploitation of community, of the church. She doesn't spare anything with her own honesty and experience of the depth of her disillusionment. But later on in the book, Why I Still Believe, she says, I've also discovered my naivety concerning the church and her people. I've also discovered that in some way, I still love the church. She has absolutely broken my heart, but nevertheless, I am committed to her. I don't know exactly what that commitment will look like in the future, and I think that's okay. I'm still learning. It's important for me to know where I stand on my belief in God, on my trust in Jesus, and on my commitment to the church. She says, I've decided to take the risk of entanglement with her. Jesus died for her, So I think I can eventually figure out how to be a part of the church in a healthy way, even knowing some horrendous jerks still haunt her ranks. I mean, like, she doesn't spare anything. So she's hurt. She's been disillusioned 24 years. But she says, at some point, I still have to trust in what Jesus has done for the church. She's honest. She's reflected. She's committed. So what do you do? If you're the person who hasn't been spurred on to love and good deeds, you've actually felt rejected or whatever it is. You know, you can remove yourself, abandon the community, go off on your own, either apprentice Jesus on your own or just completely give up on everything. But I don't know if that's the wisest. C.S. Lewis, in his letter, Letters to Malcolm, he says this, "To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up, safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable." You see what he's saying? Yes, the option is, yeah, maybe you just on your own, you're a hermit, you're not in community. But what will that do in the long term to your heart? Your heart will change, not for the better, for the worse. Why? To love is to be vulnerable. For you to love and to be loved means you have to put yourself out there. So I am not saying that that has to happen tomorrow, but potentially and perhaps Jesus, who died for the church, you included, would welcome you back into this kind of messy, imperfect, stumbling, fumbling group of people apprenticing Jesus together. See, the heart cry of every human being is to be known and loved, and that only happens with other people. It cannot happen on your own. And so this is why it is so important for us here at Kamloops Alliance to get it right, to get this right. There is way too much at stake for us to get it wrong, for us to become inward and argumentative and divisive about little minutiae issues that ultimately don't matter. Do they matter? Yes, but ultimately don't matter. Whether that's a color of the carpet or some minutiae doctrinal issue, that we will major on the majors and minor on the minors, and together in love and unity proceed. And I said this before, and I'll say it again. I believe to the core of who I am that the future apologetic, the future defense of Christianity will be the church. In a polarized and divisive world, a group of people with all of the differences and all of the opinions come together, unified by Jesus, loving each other and spurring each other on to love and good deeds. That is the future apologetic, that somebody can come and before they believe, they can belong in our community and find connection in our community. How messy they may be, they still have a place to belong. May it be so for us. Now, that's two instructions. Then the last one comes here. Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. And then verse 25, not giving up meeting together, as some of you are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. So after spur each other on, he says, meet together. So the church isn't a building, but it is a meeting. It is a meeting of different people. So don't stop meeting together, and yet here we are not meeting together. So how do you understand this? Let me just say a few things, hopefully precisely. How do we understand our current moment with not being able to meet together? Number one, COVID-19 is real and is a legitimate danger to people's health. There have been people in our congregation who have had COVID-19. There are people connected by varying degrees to our congregation who are very sick right now with a virus. And I'm not just talking about people in the later years of their life. This is a real threat and is a danger to all of us, regardless of who we are. That is a true statement. Another true statement is the BC government is doing everything they can, and I believe the best they can, and need to be supported. That has been our posture and approach as a church. We believe an important question to ask ourselves as a church, and I would say you, is what does love require of me right now? What does love require of me right now? to our city. And we believe that love requires that we would adhere to these restrictions. Now, does that mean you can't have an opinion? Of course. Does it mean that I can't have an opinion? Oh, believe me, I have an opinion. But our corporate response to all of this is to say we will abide by these restrictions, and by doing so, be a witness to our city about our place in our community. That's number two. Number three, that's all true, and this is also true. There have been dramatic implications on our society right now because of this pandemic. Dramatic implications that people's well-being is not good right now, yours maybe included. I realize even through this pandemic, I have lived a very privileged life through this pandemic, and I feel the effects of this. I feel the fatigue, the weight of this. And so that's just true of our society. I read an article in the New York Times on January 12th called The Perils of Social Distancing. It was written by actually a leadership expert, I think at a Yale or Stanford. Her name is Priya Parker. And she references in this article another book called Social Chemistry, Decoding the Patterns of Human Connection. It was written before COVID by another leader, Marissa King. Here's what she says, quoting this book. She says, after 2 months without an in-person gathering, not the church, just other people in our society, feelings of closeness between family members dropped by more than 30%. After that, friendships go frigid. That our relational connectedness to each other just completely freezes over and we're left on our own. She continues, she writes of the positive effects of connectedness as a society. She calls them high-quality connection points in public spaces. Quoting this article, quoting Marissa King, she says this, spending a couple of minutes casually interacting with a stranger or a barista, listen, can make us as happy as spending the same amount of time with our romantic partner. That's just out in the world, not even just with people closest with us. And this is what we have been lacking. So the effects on our society because of COVID-19, there has been a dramatic negative effect on people's well-being in our wider society. You and I see it, know it, and feel it. This is also true about KAC. While we think we are doing, believe we are doing the best we can by not gathering, the negative effects, I think, are felt in our community as well. Let me just give you some stats. In 2019, we count people because people count, all right? So in 2019, we had 48,142, just over 48,000 people through our church on a weekend, Kidstown included. So almost 50,000 people through our building in 2019. Well, 2020, March 2020, the pandemic hits, everything shuts down. In 2020, we had 12,867 people through our building on a weekend, Kidstown included, and in 2020, that also includes Day at the Lake, which happened at Eagle Base. So that wasn't even in our building. This is a difference of 35,000 people that did not come gathered together in community at the church. To think that that does not have an effect on our corporate community and individuals in our community, I believe, is foolish. Because over the last year, we've had 23 weeks where we have not come together. Is online ministry, you in your room right now, wherever you are tuning in, is this the best we can do? Yes. Thank you for tuning in. I'm not trying to berate us. I'm just saying there's a cost to us not meeting. Because here's what this means. 35,000 people, a difference of 35,000 people last year, had no singing together. Man, isn't it awkward to sing in your living room? I mean, some of us are the prison singers. You know, we're behind a few bars and we can't find the key. And then you're trying to sing in your living room and there's people around. You don't want to sing together, but in the room, there's a difference. Like theologically, the church is always sang together. And there's beautiful moments when we sing the great hymns of the faith or when we sing a song that unites us. And we're clapping when the gospel is being presented through song and you feel the Spirit's moving. But more than that, secondarily to that, there's like neurological benefits science tells us about corporate experience together through song. 35,000 people last year did not have those moments of interaction in the foyer. Hey, how are you? How are you doing? How is your cancer? How can I pray for you? We didn't have those just informal bump-ins. There's been babies who've been born through COVID that we haven't seen them, we haven't dedicated, we haven't baptized people to the extent that we wanted to. There's been no mutual giving and receiving, no praying together, no altar calls where people have dramatic moments of experience with Jesus, no corporate reading of the word together where there's those moments where the Spirit is bringing a text to life and this is our corporate experience. Man, this matters. It matters, and we haven't been able to do it. And Hebrews 10 says, do not give up meeting together. So, okay. Where do we go? What would I summarize this? If you desperately need people right now, you are this online thing is not cutting it. You're alone. We want to provide connection for you. We want to provide community. One of our pastors said this week, hey, put my email up on the screen. I will connect with them and will place you in a community. Please email Tim Bussey. He would love to hear from you, love to connect you to a group, a community. What we have going on right now, timb@kamloopsalliance.com. Here's the reality, though, is that our staff cannot take care and make sure that everybody is connected in our community. It is impossible for us to be the primary caretakers of our community. I've been saying that to you now for almost 3 years. And so here's what I'm asking. In the midst of a time of dislocation where we haven't been able to meet together, would you pick up the phone this week? Pick up the phone this week. We have had a concerted effort from our elders and staff to connect with people, but would you take up the mantle of being a part, a giving part, a contributing member of our community and check in with somebody who's in their later years in life, somebody who you know is struggling in different ways. Spur each other on to love and good deeds with a phone call this week. Thirdly, if you are in some type of community, a life group, I realize how difficult it is to be on Zoom. I realize just it's awkward, but would you persevere? Would you continue? Life group leaders, would you persevere? Would you pray? Would you call? Would you fight for community right now? Connection is so scarce and we need it more than ever. I'd also instruct us, remind us about the importance of being in community, of coming to church. What I want to say to you is I hope you're not getting too comfortable on your couch. I hope you're not too comfortable on your couch and that you will come back here. We did a Christmas Eve drive-through here. We had about 110 cars or so. And people drove up and they hadn't been on, some of them haven't been on our campus for like, you know, whatever it was, 8 months at that point. And they drive on campus and they're like, oh my goodness, I've missed this. And they didn't even realize, like we've all been lulled to sleep as of how important it is that we come here and do this together. And I would say that you need this more than you think. You need this more than you think or even realize. And that first weekend back, I think you will come and experience the blessing of apprenticing Jesus together. But some of you are saying, you know, bro, I'm doing fine. I actually don't need this. It's actually taught me that COVID has taught me I actually don't need community. I can do this solo apprenticeship to Jesus on my own. I would just simply say this. Last week, you had a whole bunch of meals and you probably couldn't tell me every single meal that you ate. You wouldn't be able to tell me every single meal that you ate. And yet, it kept you alive. And it's in the church. Like you come here and it's like, well, I mean, you don't even remember a whole lot of the times. So, I mean, even what I spoke about, it's not memorable. Maybe it's boring, put you to sleep, but you just continue on. You kept coming, but here's the thing. You don't remember every single moment, but it keeps you alive spiritually. It keeps you alive spiritually. And we need each other more than it's belonging to a group of people, mutual giving and taking. Let me end with this. Back to verse 23. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. Let us hold in this time where we can't be in community, seeing, loving, hugging each other. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope that we profess, to who Jesus is, that he is the one that binds us together when we can't be together. He is the one that will carry us through this time. He is the one that will give us the perseverance that we need in a time of desolation, that we would come together in a time of consolation and comfort. Let us hold unswervingly. my kids. As a dad, it's kind of strange, but I'm the strongest person they know. And when they get scared, it's cool. They run to me and hold on to my leg. Because that's all they know. Oh my goodness, I'm scared. And they run and hold on to my leg. And in this time, let me just encourage us to hold unswervingly to the strongest person we know. That we would be that type of church. So if you're lonely, if you're hurt, if you're physically unwell, sorry, that we would hold on to Jesus. And then it says, for he who promised is faithful. So I love it. Even when you can't hold on, even when it's so difficult to hold on, what matters most is not how strong you're able to hold on, but his faithfulness. That he will be who he said he will be to us. Faithful, unrelenting in his commitment to us as a church. To you, to me. And this is a grace that you and I need. That he's faithful to us. For that gap of who we are and who Jesus is. Faithful in giving us the grace we need. So if you've been hurt by church, if you're disillusioned, hold on to the grace for yourself. And maybe that grace that you've received, you'd be able to give to those people who are imperfect like you, who are stumbling and fumbling along this journey, leaders who got it wrong, people who Bible beat you, whoever it was, that we would in health be able to be a community. Simply put, if the church, not a building, a group of people, was good enough for Jesus to die for, it has to be good enough for me at some level. I want you to join together, reflect on your own or with the people in your room right now of this practice of community and how this hits you and where you're at. Thanks for tuning in. Your commitment to Jesus, KAC. I love you. I miss you. That's why I'm crying. And I hope to see you soon. Enjoy these questions. Bye.